Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably is brought to you in collaboration with Calm, obviously, Dave, obviously, and Murdoch London Barbers.
Well, would you look who it is? It's bloody you. Fancy seeing you here, you cheeky little sausage, turning up to our doorstep, listening to our podcast. Thank you for deciding to listen to another episode of Conversations Against Living Miserably. We are back with a brilliant episode for you. I love this one. I had such a nice time listening back to it. I should probably point out, though, that I love all our episodes. I feel like a proud mother, and all our episodes are my children. Which, now I think about it, we've got a lot of episodes. That'd be a lot of children to mother. I think that's a pretty bad metaphor. No one has that many kids, Shirley, and no one could love all those kids equally either and not have at least one favourite. There's bound to be one dickhead in there. I've really digressed, haven't I, from the point, which was I really like this episode because it features one of my favourite people. Now, I know if you go to see comedy, the MC might say, the next act is a really good friend of mine, and sometimes they just met that act 4 seconds ago, they've got their name written on the back of their hand, they ain't friends, that's a lie, but this is the truth. This is one of the most fantastic people in comedy. She's wonderful. I feel very lucky to know someone like her. We are joined by comedian, actress, writer, host of the Hoovering podcast, generally great person, Jess Foster-Kew. On today's episode, we will be discussing weightlifting, whether calm actually exists, and a piece of shit called baths. Enjoy!
Everybody, what? Why is why?
Maybe feel so self-conscious in my cheerful
introduction. Oh, it's so lovely.
I'm happy because we are joined today by one of my all-time favourite rays of sunshine. It is Jess Foster-Kew.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Lovely.
Oh, I feel quite a lot of pressure on me having been called a ray of sunshine, Lauren. Especially considering the content of the podcast.
Yeah. But I see you as that because when I did my Edinburgh show, my first one, Jess directed it. And so when I was a little ball of stress, Jess was always the one who calmed me down and sorted me out. And I would send you really stressed messages at 2 in the morning being I'm shit. My show is shit. And I would always get such a calm, lovely message back. So I just associate you with, like, peace. And,
do you?
Yeah.
God, that's so lovely. Thanks, mate.
You just, whatever I said, and no matter how stressed I was, you always made me feel better.
Oh, but I do think doing your first hour in Edinburgh is probably not much more stressful than that. And I think it's very easy to just be empathetic because I'd done my first hour however many years before. I won't remember.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally shat myself the hour before my first hour of my first show. It's so scary. Yeah, great. I've opened with that. it's just an objectively terrifying thing. So I think it's a very easy situation to be like, dude, you won't be able to see this for what it is. And what it is really exciting and great. And you're great. And it's fine. It's going to be fine.
Aww.
I mean, that went pretty well for you that year.
Yeah, it went all right. and you bought me a lovely body lotion at the end, which was rhubarb scented. Very nice. Yeah.
I love that you bring that up before the fact that you got nominated for Best Newcomer.
It was really nice because it was Molten Brown.
Oh, yeah, I did get you straight. I remember that now.
It's fancy.
But rhubarb's quite a bold move,
isn't
it?
I was like, yes, go on, Jess. Yeah. You have picked the right director.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, all over the body creams.
Our first question kind of links into what I've just been talking about.
Most certainly does.
Yeah. So it was, when was the last time you felt calm?
Oh, gosh.
I do have a four-year-old.
It's really, I find it really tricky to answer that in the sense that I would say I have relatively frequent times of feeling calm, but it's a very fragile calmness that can be rocked so easily and in a way where I'm yet to learn to be prepared to have my calmness ruined with the slightest thing. But no, at the moment I've got quite a new partner, very new partner. And so it's I'm in that lovely phase where all the time we spend together, especially that's just us, feels like medicinal, magic, peaceful, inner peace, amazing. So yeah, I guess when I'm with her at the moment. Yeah, it's lovely. And actually, I think because I am not a calm person, let's put that out there. I'm internally very hectic. And I would love to be a bit more contemplative or just have that bit more inner peace to be able to look further into the future, be more tactical about life. But I'm very organised, but I'm just very busy-headed. Like, even on a car journey from a place to a place, I'll do a load of stuff. I'm sort of obsessed with productivity. And I know it makes me mad. I know it makes me unhappy, but I can't stop doing it. I have CBT therapy It's CB therapy. No one ever says that. It sounds like a kids' TV programme.
Yeah.
I have CB therapy. And she's just sort of in years and years long battle with me to try and get me to take sort of more downtime. Mm. But even meditation, I've tried that and I find that I spent the whole time thinking what I could be achieving in that time.
You were just saying that yesterday, weren't you?
Yeah,
it's pointless for me. I've tried it enough times now, even listening to lovely YouTube things and stuff, and it's like I've sort of come away from it more annoyed. I'm better off trying to actually sleep if I want to rest than to try and meditate, but maybe I'll get there.
That was like me when I went to Pilates.
Yeah.
I felt like she was trying so... Everyone else seemed so on board with it, which, if anything, was making me angrier. So by the end of the hour, I was like, I would have rather just had a little nap for an hour than melted me pubic bone into the floor. That was the point I realised Pilates wasn't for me when she came out with that one. I was like, no thanks, Judy. No.
Don't want my pubes all in the floor.
Yeah. It's not meant to melt.
Yeah. It's made of bones, Judy. Christ, woman. To I meander off. I'm a terrible podcast guest, really, but to come back to answering your question, I would say because my partner is a very calm, quiet, centred person and recharges by having quiet time on her own, whereas I am very gregarious and not necessarily by meeting strangers, but I definitely recharge by using the company of people I love and being around people, sort of... us meeting each other halfway is forcing me to spend more time quietly and just with her, and I love it. But it's a very sort of, I suppose then you're still with someone, so it's more of an active kind of rest. But yeah, I find I need to calm down by getting really engrossed in something. So a brilliant story, whatever form that might take, a film or a book or whatever, or Or getting really into, like, I weightlift for fun and strength.
Yeah.
That I find very zen after that. And just after that, and just after, I know I listened to this podcast and I know Rose McAvoy said it as well, but just after coming off stage, and I think maybe Alfie Brand said it as well, but like just after exercise, there's a real... But do you know what? Actually, I'll be honest, I say calm. I think it's a high masquerading as a calm. Calmness, that. Because your body's all full of nice chemicals.
Yeah, in a sense of achievement, in the sense that you've actually done something.
Yeah, and is that calmness? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not... I think you know when you're calm because you're unwittingly creative. I think lots of people say it, but quite often if I'm falling asleep or in the shower or, you know, not really falling asleep, but in that place where your mind's just sort of going a bit blank, then little ideas pop up. And that's, I think that's when I'm calm. And like, well, I wouldn't have an idea straight off stage or straight after the gym.
Yeah,
so I don't know whether I'm just pretending that because it feels nice. I'm saying that I'm just telling you all the times I feel nice. So I don't, maybe I don't. What I think I'm saying, guys, is I don't know what calmness even is.
But I think it's like, I think the one thing we've discovered with this podcast is so individual, the idea of calm, and it's so different for every single person. And I'm not sure if it is a concept, it actually exists as a thing that you can achieve.
Oh, no, that's too deep.
Sorry.
Oh, no.
Oh, Lauren's pelvis is melting.
God.
I'm going to be on the tube home going, does calm exist?
But for you, it's something completely different than it is for someone else.
Exactly.
For me, it's like I said, I think it was in Jen's episode, it's just when my brain is thinking the least amount it possibly can.
Yeah.
When I'm not panicking about everything in the world, maybe I'm just panicking about one thing for a change.
Exactly. And it's so like variable as well, because I find, like, say having a bath calming, but only if the bath's at a certain temperature.
Yeah.
No one wants to be in a cold bath, so you might run a bath and think it's going to be a lovely calming bath, and then it's like piss cold bath.
Yeah,
is piss cold? I don't know, it's a cold bath.
I'd want my bath to be a bit warmer than piss. I think you've made a solid point.
That's the aimable temperature.
Really thinking about a yellow bath now, Lauren.
I was fuming the other day. I was like, I had the house to myself, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to treat myself, I'm going to run a bath. So I ran it and it felt nice and warm, and then I got in and it was like proper tepid, like I'd left a cup of tea standing and then just gone and had a bath in it, and then I was just in the bath fuming like, well, this isn't calm.
Oh, it's infuriating.
What a waste of water. And then the gas meter ran out of gas the next day, and I knew it was definitely me running a bath, and I was like, well, I don't know why we've got no gas left. Because I had a shit bath, that's why.
A double shit gutted. Piss cold bath. I can't do it. I find baths stressful, because the moment I get in, I feel like I should be relaxing, and then I get angry at myself because I can't relax.
Yeah.
And then I'm just furious.
And soggy.
Furious and soggy.
And furious.
Yeah. It's less than ideal, frankly.
I know that baths should be relaxing, but I like baths that are so hot that I feel sick.
Really?
That's my shower.
Which is not relaxing. And my showers as well. Really hurting my face.
I think that's a mom thing, though.
Oh.
Like, I think that's when I'll know I'll be ready to be a mom, is when I can handle a really hot bath. Because my mom's like that. My mom's baths are like bloody like a volcano.
Yeah.
And she's just like, I could do with being hotter. And I'm like, your skin is literally falling off your body.
Yeah.
But I think maybe that's a sign when I'll be ready to be a mom. So
oh,
like,
really?
I think it's the test. You're not ready for baby until you can handle
really hot shower
really
or bath.
That's the...
I think there's probably other tests that are more practical, but
yes, indeed.
Wish I'd asked Jen Bristow yesterday now if she likes a really hot bath, then I would know I was right.
Yeah.
You just have to ask everyone, every parent you ever meet in the future.
Well, we've got no more mams coming in. Got any mams in the office? Stop the podcast. Stop.
Mam survey. You've had your fire alarm test. Now it's time to talk to all the mams.
Yeah. Did you have to go through like a few different things at the gym before you found weightlifting?
Yeah.
Like, did you have to
like
sort of trial and error?
Loads of exercise I hated. Do you know what? I quite liked PE at school, and I've always liked like moving my body if it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, apart from a few things, never enjoyed exercise for the sake of exercise, just because I think historically, one of my mental health issues I've had historically has been to do with sort of eating disorder stuff. And I think historically I would have only ever been doing exercise for the sake of exercise if ultimately in my head, it was to change, to shrink my body and to feel control and to change my body and to become the person I would assume I would definitely be happy if I was thin. So I had this kind of very misguided, completely unattainable and pointless goal. And so that's a very negative association with the thing. You don't know. There were probably loads of types of moving my body. I never found out whether or not I liked or not, because I was going in really with some really grotty, self-hating, real motive. But I loved sport at school if it was like in a team or whatever. I played a bit of football, a bit of badminton and shit like that. And I loved it if you were like just so in the moment and having a laugh that you didn't even realise how knackered you were getting. And then in recent years, I got into swimming quite a lot. As with everything, I sort of took it a bit too far and did some really long swims that got quite boring. I needed the pool so hard. Well, actually, weirdly, I really love swimming in open water. Ooh. And I find that does insanely nice things for my brains and my head.
I can't swim, you know.
Can't you?
I can't swim. I can't ride a bike.
I know loads of people who learn to swim as an adult.
I'm going
to
try. I tried on holiday last year, but there was a really enthusiastic American woman was watching Matt trying, because there was only like two people around the pool. So I was like, come on, Matt, teach us to swim. And she was like, go on, girl, be the frog. Oh, and I was like, is a frog the best thing that can swim? Like, I'm not sure that's...
Go for dolphin. Come on, mate. I'm nailing this.
I don't want to be a frog. And I got quite passive aggressive because I couldn't float on my back and I was feeling very annoyed. And then a really sort of like confident French child was clearly trying to show off, just like floating like a little turd around the pool. And I was like, all right, I get it. You can float. Okay. Maybe swimming's not for me.
And then, I did loads of swimming and then I got into weightlifting. But then, with varying degrees of sort of commitment to it or whatever, I feel like I've found a nice balance now where I do it loads, but only for fun. Like, it's got to just be for fun, not to do anything different to my body. Although I like feeling strong and getting stronger. So on the one hand, I'm like, I say it's just for fun, but I really like getting stronger. I like personal bests going up. Mm. But I'm always going to keep those goals secret or anything competitive about it. Not secret, but internal, I'm not doing it. I'm not interested in being anybody's fitspiration or, it's not for Instagram or any of that shit, really, for me. But equally, I'm now much better, although it's still a journey, at going, I'm travelling for work or whatever, life. So I can't go for the next, 10 days and going, all right, don't get panicky that you can't do the thing that makes you calm. Because ultimately, why are you going then? You shouldn't, there's no, you can do some press-ups at home if you're really... Is it really that what it's about? Or is it, so I've constantly got to have an eye on myself to check what my motivations are for wanting to be there as often as I like to be there.
That's a really good one. Mm. I like that, yeah.
What was the, when was the first time that you became aware of mental health being a thing, be it positive or negative?
In the world, thing in the world or a thing for me?
Either or. Or both?
Probably quite late. I grew up in Dorset and no one really, people would... Every now and again, people would talk about somebody having had a nervous breakdown. Mm. Mm-hmm. And that would be the only time that anybody ever talks about mental health. So I'd say it's probably well into living in London. I came to London for uni when I was 18, obviously, and then stayed. So I would say... probably mid to late 20s.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, probably about, a decade ago. Mm. Mm, 36, so yeah. Yeah, I think it's all been very recent. But then I think, things have come on a real pace in the last sort of 5 or 6 years, in terms of how we talk about it and stigma around it and stuff like that. But yeah, I think there's still... I have a lot of sympathy for my parents' generation. They don't talk about things in the way that my generation's able to. Mm-hmm. And, it's their loss. They have a lot of repressed shit. There's a lot more stigma for them about getting any kind of help, I think. And both my parents would never even put a label to their stuff.
Yeah.
My mum has various issues for various reasons, but would always use a euphemism like... I'm having one of my black dog days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She would never, ever use the word. And I don't know, I sort of see that and go, all right, no one can force you to whatever. But it's hard. It's harder.
Yeah, because it's almost just kind of like brushing it off, isn't it? Like my nan used to call it, she was having a wobble.
Yeah.
And then, we found out she had like mad anxiety. Yeah. And she never addressed it whatsoever. She just kind of had little breakdowns here and there.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of thing, you start pushing it away, it just makes it worse and worse.
It's something like a wobble sounds less scary, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, also it's temporary, isn't it?
Yes.
You haven't fallen over.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't know.
Weebles wobble, but they don't fall down.
Yeah.
I don't know where that popped into my brain.
You are ready to be a mum.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Think like your little one growing up in like a different world in terms of mental health.
Oh my god, yeah, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't know. I do quite a lot of comedy about how little control I've got over his personality.
I was going to say your little sexist baby, fizzy, and then I thought if no one else has seen,
yeah, he's he's getting quite lovely now, which is annoying news for my comedy. I say that he's just less violent. He still argues, and it's very annoying and non-compliant. So long may that last. He's come in a completely different world, mm-hmm. in so many different ways. I mean, in the sense that I think both his parents, I know that both me and his dad desperately want him to be kind and gentle above anything else, mm-hmm. And healthy. That's it. You know, I don't think he's going to be brought up with any of the, I don't know, I certainly feel sorry for lads from my generation who were sort of, there was a lot more chat about boys will be boys and just a lot more toxic rubbish about, my dad is like, I've never trusted a bloke who isn't into sport. And you're like, oh my God. You know, he won't have any of that. I mean, he'll have it from the world, but he won't have had it from his parents at least. I think, it's awful to say because he's only four, but I genuinely think that the Me Too movement will have absolutely changed the way that my generation parent, in mm-hmm. terms of what you expect of your kid and what else? I suppose mental health wise, massive. Like, he'll grow up with both parents who'll be happy to have put labels to the stuff they've had, and a mum who's I don't know. Therapy saved my life repeatedly, and I happily talk about that left, right, and centre. So he'll always be aware of that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope that he'll always feel like he can get help if he needs help.
Mm. I think the way we talk about therapy has changed so much in the last couple of years, because it used to be such a reserved thing. They're in therapy, and it's kind of like, oh, God, put them over there. They're obviously very strange.
Yeah.
And now it's just kind of like, nah, fucking great. I went to therapy yesterday. Brilliant. And it's just like, and you can be really open about it and just talk about it all the time.
I talked about it in my first ever hour of comedy in 2011, and it felt really like, oh,
really?
Are you British comedian or something? Mm. God. But I remember having a joke about it, because I think it's so mad to me that people's assumptions are like, oh, they're in therapy, they must be crazy, because it's like, no, it's preventative.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily preventative. Often it is reactionary. But ultimately, the first time I had therapy was to save me from myself. And then about a year on, you know, it had done such incredible things. So I stopped. And in fairness, it gave me tools I could use. But this time round, I started it for a few reasons. But I have no intention of stopping it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, not because I'm still in a pickle. I'm all right. But I just think it's an absolute and the most incredible leveler. It's an entirely unique relationship that you can't have with anybody who cares about you.
Yeah.
And we all need people who care about us. But it's a professional level of support that can analyse and not feel inclined to say the thing you think you need to hear.
That's
you know,
yeah.
It's so important. But equally, the bit I used to have was something like people used to saying to someone, "Oh, you've got a therapist, you must be crazy." It's like saying, "Oh, she's on the pill, she must be pregnant." It doesn't make any sense.
No.
Yeah. God, I wonder what people who are little kids now, like 4-year-olds now, are going to be like as adults when it comes to mental health. It's so interesting, isn't it? Because I feel like even generation, is it Z?
Yeah.
Like teenagers now, like, even they're so aware of everything. Yeah. The language will be completely different.
Like, I was doing some uni gigs the other day, and we all said, like, every comic probably had at least one sort of joke about mental health, and it was so much, not necessarily better received, but watching these like students who, when I was at uni, and that was only what, like, I started uni 8 years ago, if someone had been making jokes about mental health, I'd be like, oh, weirdo.
Yeah.
Oh, well, are they all right? Like, are they having a crisis? But you could tell this just much more like emotionally literate audience of students were like, oh, that's funny, oh, I feel like that. And I was like, this is amazing.
It's just completely normalized the way that you can discuss it, especially like on the internet, because kind of depression memes and anxiety memes have become so popular that the language is now so well known that people, whilst they are making fun of it, are actually learning at the exact same time how everything works, and then can start addressing things if things do come up. And then obviously there are resources there, and because it's people going through it and their parents' generation will have gone through it and hopefully be more open.
Mm.
It's just making people a lot more well-adjusted. Mm-hmm. Might actually end up in a slightly more well-adjusted society.
I saw someone the other day saying their school was offering mindfulness classes.
Really?
Yeah.
And, like, the comments were, like, divided underneath. Some people, like, disagreeing and some people agreeing. And a couple of people had raised, like, well, maybe the school needs to address that they're contributing to the problem because they're putting kids through exams and this and that. And I was like, but isn't that why they're having the mindfulness class? They can't do anything about exams. They've got to have exams.
That's the government.
So aren't the classes then a good way of being like, hey, if you are stressed and can't cope, I used to be so stressy about exams.
Mm. Oh, God,
I would have loved a little class where I could go chill.
The idea of someone, so I'm looking around primary schools at the moment for when my kid's starting next. In September, and it's fascinating. Quite a few of them are quite big schools, and they've got either like a sensory space, whatever, like a calm room or whatever they call it. Or some of them are just straight up like, there's a counsellor in there and you can make an appointment.
That'd be amazing.
It is amazing.
God.
It is amazing. But also, I suppose that school, I mean, you go in there essentially as a talking baby and come out in puberty.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot to go through. You need some guidance through that.
Definitely.
And teachers aren't qualified for that necessarily, you know. Yeah, I think it's amazing. Mindfulness in school.
I trained as a peer mentor in secondary school, which was, you would sit in a classroom at lunchtime and someone could come and knock on the door if they had any troubles, and which, looking back, was probably super early days of like mental health and looking out for each other. But no fucker would ever come. And I think the training was literally like, listen to people talk, but if it's serious, come get a teacher, that kind of thing. So it'd be me thinking I was like being really helpful and like contributing to the community of my school. And I would just sit for the entire lunchtime being like, someone will come. Someone will come, and when they do, I'm going to have the best advice. This little nerdy 12-year-old.
What did you experiment with before you found weightlifting as like your thing that helped? Was it kind of a stage where you were just going through and trying so many different things, or was it like an accidental process that you just kind of went, that seems good, I'm going to try that?
Oh, yeah, relatively accidental.
Yeah.
I think in terms of types of exercise to help, I think it's just a case of it getting to an age where I can acknowledge Two things. One, on a physical level, genuinely acknowledge that I don't think I like consciously being out of breath. I'm not that much of a masochist.
Yeah.
And so any kind of like, you know, running on my own, I've always been very envious of people who can find a place of zen during mm-hmm. running. Swimming I loved because I didn't get puffed, but you can swim. But the problem kind of with swimming, I felt like eventually was if you get really good at a really steady front crawl, really like, then you can swim a really long way and not really be challenging your body that mm-hmm. much, oddly. But it did put my head in a very zen place. But I don't know, it just sort of lost its spark. They kind of felt like I got to a point where there was nowhere else to go with it, really.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to start doing, like, swimming across a channel stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm really busy. but I think with finding weightlifting, I think it's more to do with... It coincided with finding peace with my, I should say, I'm not finished on this, I'm not fixed, but finding the most peace I've ever had with my body mm-hmm. and stopping trying to change my body. Mm-hmm. And knowing that, you know, this sort of, however latent or tiny or background, genuinely letting go of the idea that there's somebody in a Hollywood perfect body inside me that I will one day become and then I'll be happy.
Yeah.
It's making a decision or having a genuine, solid realisation that I can just be happy now with my body mm-hmm. and go, well, this is it. And when I'm old, I'll look back and go, oh my God, look at that body. Look at that body I had now. Now my body's all old. Like, I don't know. There's such joy and peace in that.
Yeah.
I think that just came at the same time as the weightlifting.
Right.
And the weightlifting being anything magical in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, like, you know, I can give a fuck about fitspiration. I think you can find it through walking or the right kind of therapy or whatever. But again, you know, it's an ongoing journey. I still get knocked by things all the time. Mm. And I sort of have to have an eye on it and try and clock it as quickly as I can. And yeah.
I think that like level of self-acceptance is so beautiful and so rare. Mm. It's amazing. That's what kind of like body positivity is doing as well, hand in hand with mental health, is just letting us know that you don't have to keep living your life to try and obtain some sort of unattainable nonsense mm-hmm. that yeah. is fed to you. And you are feeding to yourself and you're convincing yourself that you need to look a certain way, do a certain thing, act a certain way. I think it's very rare for people to go, do you know what, I'm actually okay with who I am, yeah. how I look. And yeah. hopefully, I think younger generations are definitely becoming a bit more accepting of who they are.
I think they are, but equally, there's a generation now of, you know, young adults who will have been on social media since day yeah. one or been having mm-hmm. photographs taken of them since day one. And I think that is changing our self-perception. Yeah. The fact that we can edit we do all, you know, Photoshop and edit our images of ourselves. So we're all putting not all, but there's a lot of unrealistic imagery out
yeah.
there. Equally, like you say, body positivity on the flip side means that because of Instagram and all of that social media, we've got access to the most incredibly wonderful, different, you know, fat, disabled, diverse, intersexual, non-binary mm-hmm. bodies that are just out, and you can look at them. And and I think actually it's a fascinating part of the potential journey towards being able to see beauty in your own body. Mm-hmm. It's a much easier step because initially we're so trained to not see beauty in those types of bodies.
Yeah.
But if you can get to the point where you're looking at them and going, oh, my God. Mm-hmm. And it starts, I think it starts, because initially you do go, oh, fucking hell, they're brave. yeah. But then it goes, oh, my God, they're so fucking brave. Mm. And then that admiration for their braveness tends to be like, no, look how gorgeous that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then then it's sort of, that's the point I'm at now. Not quite in being able to look at me and go, oh, my God, I want to marry myself. Like, one day, Lizzo, one day. But I do think, you know, eventually it'll get to the point where you go, well, there's no logic if you can look at that and go, fit, glorious, mm-hmm. that you can't look at yourself and think that.
Yeah.
I think it was last year, maybe, or the year before. I want to say ASOS, but done from Stephanie ASOS, but it was a company like that.
Yeah.
And for their, like, sort of latest campaign, every model had something wrong with their skin. So yeah. it was like psoriasis. Mm-hmm. I had never, in 26 years on this planet, seen someone modelling clothes with psoriasis. And again, I did that first, like, oh, God, she's so brave. And then I started to cry, literally looking at my phone, because I was like, that's my skin. Yeah. That is my skin being presented as beautiful, which yeah. I'd never... So people had, like, rosacea, and is it vitiligo?
Vitiligo.
That one.
And I was like, that is amazing. And I've never seen any company do it since. And I'm just like, now I'm like, come on. I got excited the other day because I thought someone was modelling bikinis with psoriasis. And I was like, yes. But then I realised it was just sand on their skin. And I'm like, no. I got really excited for a second. I was like, say I could model that's bikinis. So and I was funny. Like, oh, it's sand. Yeah, I think that's why it's so important for like the media to have a sense of responsibility for the people they're putting in these magazines. Mm. And
it's interesting. I think there's been a shift just in the last 6 months, massive. In the last year, Simply Be are incredible body positive clothes company. And I should shop from them, shouldn't I? Really, I talk about them all the time because their adverts are incredible. I saw a woman deadlifting in an advert, like a mainstream TV advert.
I saw someone with stretch marks the other day, or like cellulite.
Yes.
And I was just like, when you do it again, they hadn't obviously addressed it, not to be like, look at this model, but I was like, oh wow, that's a.
That's what all actual legs look like.
I want to see it with like men's clothes as well.
Yeah.
There's like someone with a dad bod.
Yeah.
And these little Calvin Kleins. Yes. Yeah. More dad bods, more psoriasis. That isn't sand, please.
Yeah.
If any advertising people are listening.
Genuine real bodies. Yeah. And a full bloody spectrum of them, please. Yeah.
It just makes you feel. It does wonders for your mental health to see yourself represented.
It normally.
Back. Yeah.
What happened? It's been such a weird. I suppose it's just been since the advent of advertising, even when it was illustrations and stuff like that, but that this whose idea of something ideal, and then we just went down a hole with that for fucking centuries.
Yeah.
And it's fucked us up.
Have you read, or you must have read Sarah Pascoe's book about how like in the past like it was more attractive to be bigger because it was a sign that you had money and you look after yourself, and it was less attractive to be thin because people would be like, oh well, I'm gonna have to fend for that one.
Yeah.
Like, oh, when did it change that?
Yeah.
It's advertising. That's, they just want to sell a shit.
Yeah. Well, it is, the diet industry and patriarchy, essentially.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anxiety bingo.
Ooh. Oh, this is a good one. Would you rather be told that everything is going to be fine, but then it's not fine, or be told exactly how horrible it's going to be?
Ooh. Do you know what? Exactly how horrible it's going to be.
Yeah, same.
And I say that because I've had a baby. I don't mean in terms of parenting, because actually, in that sense, people are just, okay, about childbirth, I want to know exactly how horrible it's going to be, because I was sold an absolute sea of shit that you can deep breathe yourself into a state of pain-free trance.
I feel a bit more prepared now I've seen your show. Yeah. I'm like, that's what it's like.
I think, I wish someone had been honest with me and gone, with your personality, take the drugs. you wear your emotions on your surface, you will be very loudly and very scared and a lot of pain. You're not a very zen woman. You will not be able to just breathe through this. But saying that with the like, it's going to be fine, I do say that to fellow kind of new parents or people who are just having a baby, because ultimately there's nothing worse than that person stops in a supermarket and goes, you got it all. It's got it all to come. It's downhill from here. He knows. Mm. Everybody's experience of parenting is different.
Mm. We've got a couple of minutes left if you wanted to ask our final question.
I would like to ask that, Aaron. Thank you. I don't know what kind of fucking mood I'm in today.
Yeah, it's brilliant. But it's loving it.
Oh, do you know what? I would like to ask.
Yeah. Fuck you, Aaron. I will.
So excited to hear it.
Patriarchy telling you.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Aaron.
If you not all could Aaron's. Go back to your younger self and give yourself some advice on like mental health and living without misery, what would you tell yourself?
I would tell myself to live for the moment a bit more. I think because it's something you can only learn about yourself, but I've learned that I'm very like, I'm happiest when I'm not goal focused. So I've learned to shirk questions like, where do you see yourself in 5 years and stuff like that? Because it's not, you know, people's brains work in different ways, but like dream boards and stuff like that don't work for me. I need to be enjoying the process to be happy, which means being in the moment and enjoying the thing for the sake of doing the thing, rather than to get another thing or to win a prize or to win a competition, or it's just not how I work. So I would go back and say to myself, just enjoy things as they're happening. Don't be doing things for the sake of trying to get other things. just do the things you want to do and enjoy them while they're happening. Because if you're just living for the next thing or only enjoying the planning, then your anticipation will always be better than the thing itself. And I think that's no way to live.
I needed to hear that one.
Yeah, me too, actually. That's really good.
Like, see, this is why I like hanging around with you, Jeff.
Oh! Well, I wish I was better at taking my own fucking advice.
Well, we're all guilty of that, though.
Yeah.
I told you always sort my life out.
Oh, babe.
Brilliant. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
I told you that was a good episode, didn't I? What a lovely little listen. Thank you so much to Jess for being a brilliant guest. Now, if you'd like to see Jess live, she was on tour with her fantastic Edinburgh Comedy Award nominated show Hench. I saw it. It was incredible. I absolutely adored it. I recommended it to everybody for obvious reasons. A lot of Jess's tour dates got rescheduled. If you head to her website, jessicafosterq.com, you can have a look if she's heading anywhere near you, and I would highly recommend that you catch her show. As you've heard, she's a great person and a fantastic comedian. You owe it to yourself to get a ticket to see her. Thank you so much, Jess, and thank you, Aaron. I was going to say, for being there, and then realised that sounded really, like, passive-aggressive, but you know what I mean. Thank you, Aaron, for being a lovely friend and a brilliant host, as always. And thank you to Dave and Calm for letting us make these podcasts. If you enjoy us, please give us a like, rate, share, subscribe, tell people, all the general podcast things. And you can always donate to Calm as well if you have a few quid spare and want to help those guys continue doing the fantastic work that they do. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to see you again. I'm going to wrap up this outro now because it's very warm under my duvet and I feel like I'm going to faint. See you soon. Bye. Bye, 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 bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Would you give your mum, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no! Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got 6 comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your social history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this? What is...
I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.